Welcome to Astor Economic Week in Review. My name is John Eckstein. I'm the Chief Investment Officer of Astor Investment Management. I'm joined today by my friend and colleague, Nick Porter. Nick, hello.
Hey, John.
So we're recording just after the payroll numbers released on Friday, March 4th. And I think our plan today is to run down the payroll numbers, the PMI numbers that's come out the last couple of days, and talk about any sort of revision to the Fed outlook that's been made recently. In a nutshell, I guess I'm going to say that the economy is still quite strong. The Fed is still on path to hike, but obviously there's a lot more uncertainty than there was 2 weeks ago, given the geopolitical situation. What do you make of that, Nick?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we've seen in the data some evidence of the impact of Omicron, and then respectively, some evidence of the impact of Omicron rolling off and stronger numbers across the board. So that's encouraging. Obviously, the geopolitical situation in Ukraine and Russia is sort of a question mark, but in aggregate, I kind of expect that to not have a large impact on the U.S. economy.
Yeah, I mean, I think the caveat to that would be that any sort of decrease in inflation has been put off, right? And inflation's got, you have to increase your inflation expectation for the next 12 months and maybe the 12 months beyond that. Would you agree with that?
I think that's true. I mean, I think you'll see two different forces moving in opposite direction. One obviously being energy, which will likely remain quite robust for the near future, with Russia being a sizable exporter of natural gas and oil, and also other commodities, things like wheat and corn, which Ukraine is responsible for. And then on the other hand, I think some of the forces that are maybe a little bit salubrious for inflation are some degree of supply chain normalization, consumers running down their balance sheets, things of that nature. In aggregate, I think the expectation for inflation is probably less benign than it was just 2 weeks ago because of some of these turmoils we've seen in energy markets.
Yeah, and I think also you expect growth to be a little bit slower, sort of worldwide growth be a little bit slower. That'll have some modest effect on the U.S., but overall, higher inflation. So let's get to this month, what's going on in the United States exactly today. We got the payroll numbers. So this is a blowout. It's the only way I can describe it. Change in non-farm payrolls was expected to be a hefty 423. It was 678. Last, the revisions were positive. Unemployment rate went from 4% to 3.8%. Labor force participation rate ticked up. Underemployment rate actually stayed the same. But in general, great month. We see a huge decline in the number of people who are unemployed because they were sick. So the Omicron effect was real. And it doesn't seem like there's too much messing around with. It seems like the last month's gains were real as well. It wasn't just an artifact. We see 6.6 million jobs added over the last 12 months of February. It's just an extremely strong labor market.
Yeah. I mean, just looking back over the past year compared to other recessions, this is just an astonishingly rapid recovery in the labor market. And I think what's quite encouraging about, you know, maybe the past 6 months or so is the gains in the services sector, which suggests that a lot of these gains are really related to the pandemic. And hopefully that continues to improve. I think the outlook for the labor market is quite strong.
Yeah, we had 400,000 jobs every month since May, the longest streak on record. So just good, good, and good. Digging into the data notes, unemployment rate less than a high school diploma dropped to its lowest rate on record, huge drop last month. That's probably related to what you were talking about, service sectors hiring back. Employees on non-farm payrolls and laundry services is still substantially below its peak of 1.6 million. It's like 1.4, but has been making solid progress. And I'm going to say that that's like the back to work, the dry cleaning effect
right
going on. What else? Aggregate weekly hours is about, so the number of people employed times the number of hours they work is only about 0.2% below its February 2020 level. So if you include self-employment, that is probably a new high. Leisure and hospitality added 179,000 jobs last month. Even so, it's still 1.5 million jobs below where it was February 2020. And the other big holdout is a state and local government. So private employment is only about 0.5% less than it was in February 2020. and state and local employment is more than 3% below where it was. And it's coming back at a sort of very stately pace. It's not accelerating like the other things. Any other details that leapt out at you, Nick?
Well, I guess really a question for you. So you three, the unemployment rate is at 3.8%, which is quite low, although we've seen lower as recently as, say, 2018, 2019. Powell, the chair of the Fed, said that he sees the U.S. at least maximum employment. And I guess I'm wondering what you make of that statement. Obviously, nominal wage gains have been quite strong, but depending on how you measure it, they're still quite negative in a real sense. And I guess my question is, do you agree that with Powell that we're sort of near or at or above maximum employment?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Primary age employment population ratio is still below it, where it was in January 2020 by a lot, by, you know, a percent, something like that. I don't love the unemployment rate in general, right? Because like you're both the numerator and the denominator change over recessions and pro-cyclical ways. And it's just hard to tell what's going on with precision, right? So basically, like a lot of people have quote unquote retired, but they're going to unretire, like if they get lured back into the labor force, if they need money, whatever. So I think there's definitely more room to add people to the labor force. And you're right, like the hourly earnings, we didn't mention it, hourly earnings are up 5.1% year on year. They were flat month on month. That's not the best number because it doesn't take compositional effects into account. So we added a bunch of leisure and hospitality workers. They're lower paid. We don't account for that in this number. But in general, like if you take it at face value, 5.1% is less than 7%, which is the inflation rate, right? So we're not making real earnings increases. So that says to me that the labor force still has room to rise.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that the you know, this is just during his testimony to Congress. And he did seem to sort of point a finger at a tight labor market and wage pressures being responsible for, or at least partly responsible for inflation. And I think that while on the face of it is true, is kind of a puzzling line of approach for the Fed chair, given that I think there's still probably some gains to be made.
Yeah. A debate that's going on in the economics profession is people like Larry Summers saying basically it's time to raise unemployment to lower inflation. And that's something that can happen, right? We can definitely raise unemployment by raising interest rates enough. How much it's going to lower inflation is not clear, right? But there's basically everybody still has this old Phillips curve model in their head. And they're like, yeah, I know that doesn't work, but it kind of does, right? I know that's not true, but it is, it's true. And so I don't know where the Fed stands on that, right?
Yeah, it is curious. And actually, the New York Fed recently had a blog post that we can link to in the notes talking about what you're supposed to do with a pretty flat Phillips curve and this kind of situation, which is a good read. And we'll, as I said, link it.
Oh, that's a good idea. We'll put that in the show notes. Let's transition to the Fed. So there, I said briefly at the start, like my theory about the Fed is that it hikes according to plan and cuts according to events. And I think that they're going to do that. And the plan right now is we're going to raise rates 25 basis points a meeting for a while, four meetings-ish, and then we're going to see where we are. And we're going to have an absolute decline in the balance sheet soon, in the second quarter, I think. What do you think about that as an outlook?
Yeah, I think that's all exactly right. It's funny, just a month ago, the market was pricing in 50 basis points, and I think, or near 50 basis points, and got pretty far ahead of itself. And now the consensus is for 25 basis points this month. And comments from Fed speakers have sort of indicated maybe in the 2% range as a terminal rate over the next year or so. Obviously, the question mark for policymakers is the story and the linkages between inflation and output vis-a-vis the situation in Ukraine. And so I think that might add a little bit of risk aversion to the path of policy going forward. I don't think it really materially changes the outlook until the outlook itself materially changes.
Yeah. And I guess like I was on the board, I would vote for all of what I've said. But I would also be saying that 2% is not going to be enough, right? It's going to be a year from now. Rates are 2%. Inflation's still at 4%, right? At best. And that's when things start to get tricky. Because, of course, the Fed has a dual mandate, right? Like the Fed has to promote maximum employment as well as price stability. And historically, they have not taken the full employment part as seriously as the price stability. But in the last 10 years, the Fed has tried to say, no, we really care about full employment, and we'll see.
Yeah. And in the last 10 years, they sort of had that luxury of saying, we'll wait and see on inflation. And even though unemployment's quite low, we're going to be gradual in our hiking cycle. And of course, even came up with average inflation targeting to reach that goal, because the prospect of higher or hotter inflation seemed so further off or impossible. You know, all this talk about looking like Japan and secular declines and disinflation, and that seems almost another world from now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a theory that the West just ran well under potential for 25 years and with nobody really saying anything about it. And that's sort of the story of 1995, say, to 2020. Everybody's the data that's easily available, like, might not be helpful in this next part of the evolution of the global economy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the only other thing I did want to mention briefly was the PMIs, the purchasing managers indices. Last week, we talked a little bit about the preliminary PMI, the market preliminary PMI. Those came out, their final numbers were quite close to the preliminary. Again, those are somewhat weaker than they were a few months ago. So in the other series of PMIs, the ISM, same thing. They're definitely weaker than they were 6 months ago. So ISM numbers are sort of at typical strong numbers now, as opposed to off the chart strong numbers. And so like the ISM for manufacturing is 58, which is a totally solid, good number. It was much higher a few weeks ago or a few months ago. The services number is 56. Again, a solid, but below where it was previously. The market numbers are closer to average than sort of maybe they're still the high, they're the high end of average too, I'll say. So maybe they're telling a consistent story of not exactly moderation, but no longer insane catch-up growth. And I think that you can see that other places in the economy too. Here at Aster, we do take all the countries' PMIs, we weigh them by GDP, and we sum that up. And that manufacturing number is gangbusters, right? So what that's saying is that, so the world PMI, if you had one, is growing extremely high rates still. And we'll see if that continues, right? Like, China's supposed to moderate its growth a lot this year. Certainly growth in Europe has been declined, you expect that to be lower as of 2 weeks ago. So we'll see if that continues. Do you have any insights on the PMIs, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing I would say as far as ISM services is that it was definitely a weaker number than anticipated. But I'm kind of, as a sunny optimist, prepared to look right past it. And that's really because the employment subcomponent of ISM services actually declined. It was below 50, it was like 48 or so. I really just sort of suspect that's Omicron related. And I think we'll probably see a little bit of a pickup next month.
Interesting. We'll see how that goes. All right. I think we'll leave it there. If you would like more economic news, you can check out the Aster website, AsterIM, that's imforinvestmentmanagement.com. You can download the Aster Research app, or you can reach out to your Aster sales representative. In the meantime, we will be back probably next week after the CPI report, and then give listeners a week off. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Sean.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.